going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I'm Chris DeFrancesco. The normal crew are all here, and we're covering a pretty fun one. I mean, it's a very historical. They don't deserve to hear your names.
Excuse me.
I said they. You guys deserve. But this is
got a real life Paul Dano in the chat right now.
Dear Lord. Don't talk about George like that. This pay-per-view, you know, many times in the past, we've talked about how certain pay-per-views are a one-match show. Mm. Unfortunately, I believe that this is a one-match show. Thankfully, it's arguably the greatest match in wrestling history, which we will get into, but it really sucks when you look at the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania and there's 9 matches on the card. And when people look back at WrestleMania 25, the first thing they think of is HBK and Taker. And people can actually rarely have I ever heard some wrestling fan mention another match on that card. And that's not great. Although this pay-per-view was a mega moneymaker for the company. WrestleMania 25, April 5th, 2009 from Houston, Texas. In the beautiful Reliant Stadium, 975,000 pay-per-view buys, 605,000 of those are domestic. The attendance was 61,611. They had a live gate of $7.2 million, and the pay-per-view revenue was $21.5 million.
Chris, I can't believe you would disparage the Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal victory by Santino Marella.
I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, you talk about the granddaddy of them all.
Like, the fucking disrespect you're just spewing right now.
So
if you forgot that was on this card, by the way.
Exactly. See, that's what I mean. People forget.
No, you're totally right, because I even look back at this Mania and go, when somebody says WrestleMania 25, I go, oh yeah, Taker Michaels. I don't really ever really remember. And well, maybe I do remember the Money in the Bank match, because you know, I was a huge CM Punk fan when he was in WWE. I'm sorry. Yeah. Don't sue me. Don't blur me out, Peacock. but like I was a big CM Punk fan. So like I remember this being him winning it, but it is. You're totally right, 100%. It's a one match card pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Which still it's still crazy to me to think that, but
especially at that time.
Exactly what I mean, especially at this time. And this was a downtime for the company in 2009 also. This pay-per-view had 975,000 buys. SummerSlam had 369. Royal Rumble had 450. But if anyone looks around, you have 270, 180, 213, 170. So not that many, you know, domestically, the pay-per-view buys were also just not great outside of WrestleMania. So again, 2009 was a really tough time to watch wrestling as well, because a lot of the top guns were kind of on their way out. Like Triple H was part-time. Shawn Michaels was very part-time. Undertaker, part-time. Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho was on his way out again.
Dad bod Chris Jericho with the trunks, which I absolutely hated this look for him, by the way.
Right.
No, I was actually just going to say that, though, Chris. This is absolutely we're kind of in a transitional period.
This is the Cena era.
We're like not in the height. I guess you could say we're almost in the height of the air quotes PG era.
Yeah.
You know, we're like almost right there.
So
this is a transitional time for the company. As you just said, people, we're losing those pillars of the attitude. Well, the attitude era guys are gone for the most part,
for sure. But
the ruthless aggression guys, they're starting to wean out. Booker T's in TNA at this point, because it was a weird time. But it was still kind of entertaining to watch. I don't think WWE got really bad until
2011, 12, 13.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Like it got bad for a few years where it was just unwatchable. I mean, it's not much better now, but
No, I agree.
It spikes every once in a while.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We're 8 years removed here from WrestleMania 17 being in the Houston Astrodome. And that was absolutely, obviously, the one of the most famous WrestleManias, if not the most memorable one of all time. Reliant Stadium at the time here was a state-of-the-art stadium. And it had over
Texas Stadium, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, this is over 72,000 people. Just a massive event. There was one match that people remember most of the show, which we talked about, which is Taker and Shawn. It wasn't the main
Mysterio and Bradshaw.
You know, and it wasn't even the main event. It was in the middle of the show. You know, Triple H and Randy Orton in yet another match in their never-ending feud at the time headlined this show. So let's get into it. WrestleMania 25, April 5th, 2009, inside Reliant Stadium in Houston, Texas. The show started with a video package welcoming us to WrestleMania, which they did every single year. As always, the videos are spectacular. Howard Finkel welcomed us to the show and threw it over to the Pussycat Dolls, which I think Nicole Scherzinger at this time.
Yes.
So she did okay. They were really popular at the time.
She still looks great, man.
Yeah, she was the only real talent. That's why they only had her singing. So
it's so, you know,
the rest of them were just interchangeable hot chicks.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Opening match, you know, this was an era where the opening, you know, the curtain jerker was always usually really good. And here we are. This match, the pay-per-view starts off with that Money in the Bank ladder match. Kofi Kingston versus Kane, MVP, CM Punk, Christian, Finlay, Mark Henry, and Shelton Benjamin. And this one, I mean, just spectacular. I mean, as always, just bump after bump. You know, this one lasts almost 15 minutes. CM Punk gets the win. This was, you know, a 4-star match, in my opinion. It was like most Money in the Bank matches. I thought they kind of lacked big spots, George, than they did in the past. There weren't as many crazy bumps aside from Benjamin's like insane dive off the ladder. But you know, instead of guys doing the wild bumps, you know, most of the bigger spots involve guys like doing dives and then be caught by other wrestlers. It just felt like it was a much safer ladder match here. Did you get that same thought?
Yeah, it seemed like they weren't taking as many chances. Maybe that was because they were drifting out of that Ruthless Aggression era into the PG era. Maybe that's what it was. But as I told you when I was watching this, I completely forgot the CM Punk won twice.
Yeah.
One, 2 years in a row. Now, watching it and having the benefit of hindsight, I would have had Christian win.
Dude, just the crowd wanted Christian to win so bad.
The crowd was hype. Like whenever he was on the ladder, the crowd came came to life.
He got an incredible pop. Too.
He really did.
When CM Punk did that springboard onto the ladder, I audibly heard the crowd boo.
I know.
They're like, they don't want you, Punk. Interesting. Yep.
Don't say interesting because Punk was one of the most over guys in the business at one point.
Not according to that crowd.
Okay, well, but
there must have been a strong Canadian contingent in Texas.
five years later is the most over thing in the business.
The Reliant Stadium and Bahrain have the highest Canadian contingent.
I mean, it is crazy to think though. 2 years later, the hottest man in the industry was CM Punk.
Yeah.
When he was, you know, coming back, you know, Living Color as his entrance, and then going at it with Cena. That was, you know, 2011 was a really good year for WWE because, you know, it actually had something different. And they had something to other than John Cena every single week. So, and again, looking back, we've said this before, we're like, Jesus, will somebody else be on my television other than John Cena? Yeah. When now we're like, God, I would love Cena to be back every single week.
Oh my God, yeah. No, that's true though, because I mean, me and George are prime examples of that. Like,
I couldn't stand Cena for a while. Yeah.
Back at that point, man, we absolutely hated him.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can see him.
Yeah,
because we're believers.
That's right.
Now it's like, man, like I wish I appreciated him when he was at his height, because I love the guy now.
Now, who did Punk cash this briefcase in on? Because I don't remember.
I don't recall. I'll have to go see. Didn't he become the world heavyweight champion?
Something like that. But like, I feel
was
like
it Edge.
It might've been
I know, like, I think so.
Because I know like Punk winning the briefcase was always a big deal, and the crowd was hot. But I feel like whenever at this point, Punk, whenever he got the belt, like it was just like, all right, well, he won the briefcase, so we have to give him a belt. But now we don't know what to do with him as champion.
Yeah. So let me see here.
Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, because the year before he cashed in on Edge.
Jeff Harvey.
Yeah. Hardy beat Edge in a ladder match. I can't believe Jeff Hardy was a fucking world champion.
Multi-time.
I cannot believe that. I've never, ever have liked the Hardy. I've said that before.
Yeah.
I respected them now. Like, I respect what they did, but I could not stand them at their... I couldn't believe Jeff Hardy was a world champion. Jeff Hardy, of all people.
Bring back Mike Adamly.
Oh, man. Up next is the highlight of the night that got it nice and early. Kid Rock sings a medley of his songs.
Nobody asked for that. Not a single person.
Nope. I skipped right over this, too. I was like, damn good.
Then they went right into the next match. I'm not going to even talk about stupid shit.
They could have just had the women come out to their songs, but no. Here's Kid Rock with his fucking Elvis Costello glasses and his $5 Walmart hat singing his best ofs that nobody asked for.
Yeah. And I think this was 100%, and watching this over, the worst thing ever on a WrestleMania, even worse than the Miller Lite Catfight girls. I think this was the worst match I've ever seen. It was so bad of an idea that even Trish Stratus reportedly declined to be part of it.
Even worse than Big Show versus Aki Bono?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
What?
That was Paul White, brother.
God, dude, like, you're such a fucking hater. Like, I hate fucking sumo wrestling.
Yeah, why is it on my WrestleMania?
Why don't you do yourself a favor? Hop on a little plane, fly yourself over to Japan, watch a few things in the Tokyo Dome, and you'll think everything's a 6-star then.
Oh, you're right. 7 stars is in Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, that's right. 7. Bitch. So next match, Chris Jericho versus Jimmy Snuka, Roddy Piper, and Ricky Steamboat, being led to the ring by the Nature Boy Ric Flair. Look, this was an elimination handicap match. Obviously, you do not want all these dudes in the ring at the same time.
Especially Snuka.
Oh god.
Awful.
Yeah.
at one point when Piper had Jericho in the ring and Snuka wanted to tag in, and he was pointing at his head, and he was trying to tell like Piper, hey, like ram his head into mine. But I'm sitting on the couch thinking, hey, you should slam his head down the ground on a rock and then say it was accident.
Good lord, man.
Jesus. He's a murderer.
Oh my god, man.
So
no sugar coating.
Come on.
So the winner here, after 9 minutes, is Chris Jericho. This match is a shit show. But there was a good match in it when it was just Steamboat and Jericho. My God, at the time, Steamboat was 56 years old and hadn't been in the ring in years.
Like 15 years at that point, I think.
Yeah. This match, the end of it was so good with Steamboat that Jericho, this was years ago, he talked about his podcast, that Steamboat and Jericho went around the loop of house shows for like 6 more months.
Did they really just
wrestled every night. Yeah.
Well, I know they had a rematch. They had a rematch at Backlash.
Yeah. They just kept going. Yeah. They just kept going at the, it was so good that Steamboat and Jericho were like, let's go take this to the road. And they wrestled for like another 6 months.
It's funny that this whole thing was because Chris Jericho is like, hey, all you aging has-beens need to hang up the boots and get out of my ring.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 2023.
Hey,
this aging has-been needs to get out of the ring.
Yeah, but I do feel like Piper, I mean, and Snuka had just no business being in the ring at this time.
Piper gave an effort.
He did, and I love him. I love the fact. Anytime I got to see Piper, to me was awesome. I love Roddy Piper.
He yelled after every shot.
Yeah.
At least he had knee pads in this match.
Oh God, I know.
Supposedly when he was the tag team champs with Ric Flair for some godforsaken reason.
What bothered me about this also about the whole booking was I thought Chris Jericho should have had a bigger impact in this pay-per-view, considering he was probably the number one wrestler in the world in 08, a year prior. You know, the Rourke stuff here, I thought was okay for the celebrity moment, but it just could have been so much better. You know, post-match, Jericho beats up Flair because Flair has to take some bumps. They have to make it about him.
I actually thought he was going to. I couldn't remember if he started bleeding or not. I was like, well, here, he fell to the ground. I was like, here comes the blood. And it didn't come. And I was just like,
did a backdrop. Well, my head's going to bleed.
Yep.
Oh, I was like, heavens to Betsy. It just didn't happen.
Jericho's got blades on his knees when it is the code breaker. I better dash my face up a few
times.
That's
when I thought it was going to happen. And I was just like, oh, here comes the blood. And then his shirt stayed white. I was like, well, I was wrong.
Wow. We were shocked.
I was like, oh, yeah, it's not Moxley who blades when he just breathes. He's my forehead just busted open.
Oh, back body drop. Somebody quick, get me the blade.
Yeah.
And
make sure the camera catches it.
Yeah, right. Such a clown. Mickey Rourke gets in afterwards. The crowd wasn't as hot as you probably expected. They had an impromptu boxing match.
Nobody cared about Mickey Rourke.
Exactly.
After, 1994.
Listen, if you're going to have Mickey Rourke at WrestleMania, the time to do it would have been at WrestleMania 7. Right after Harley Davidson and Marble Man came out. You could have had a tag match. It could have been Harley Davidson and the Marble Man against the Bushwhackers.
Yep. So the original plan, I remember reading about this, was to have Jericho face Rourke in a wrestling match, but Rourke's management team thought it would hurt his chances at winning an Oscar for the wrestler. I mean, Rourke didn't win it anyway, but
he did get nominated, though.
He did get nominated. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next match is a Extreme Rules match. Matt Hardy versus Jeff Hardy. Matt gets the win by pinfall at just over 13 minutes. I had high hopes for this match. You would think it would be a 4-5-star type match, but I gave it 3. It was good. Obviously not great. I liked a lot of the big spots they did. The problem was that some of them just took way too long in between getting the moves in. The ending was well done, though, with Jeff missing the big leg drop and Matt capitalizing with a twist of fate. Jeff got the win back, though, brother, next month at Backlash. Then he went on to have a great main event feud with Edge and then later CM Punk, one of the better feuds of 2009. But again, it was good. That's all I can say about it. It didn't hurt the show. It definitely belonged on the show. So prior to the next match, the champion, John Bradshaw Layfield, said he was a proud Texan that loved living in New York City, which was great heat. but this was just bullshit here. Intercontinental title match, JBL versus Rey Mysterio. Mysterio wins in 22 seconds. This was essentially the retirement of JBL at the time because he did have back issues. But so 22 seconds. Got to make sure we give more time to that Divas Battle Royal. Just unbelievable. All right.
Although I am going to say that Mysterio's Joker attire was on point.
Oh my God. It was so good. Yeah. It was so good.
Right after the Dark Knight came out the year before.
Yeah, very much so. All right. The next match is the reason why we're here. This is probably, this is my personal favorite wrestling match of all time. It's my favorite Shawn Michaels match. It's my favorite Undertaker match. It's my favorite build ever. This is my pro wrestling everything, is this match. So the video package for Undertaker and Michaels was next. The match was set up after Shawn Michaels ended his feud with JBL. He was happy, so he decided to challenge the Undertaker at WrestleMania, try to be the first person to get a win after Undertaker was 16-0. It was, you know, the man with the streak versus the man known as Mr. WrestleMania. And since it was a 25th anniversary, it was fitting that this was the match. They mixed religion with the match a bit, as Michaels talked about having eternal life and Undertaker telling him that sometimes it's hell trying to get to heaven. I thought they didn't overdo it with the faith aspect. I thought it fit perfectly well with this thing.
Not as good when Michaels tag teamed with God, the face of McMahon's. That was prime more, storytelling. Was
more
prime
brilliance storytelling. By Vince.
prime storytelling.
So, and you know what's funny? I
ridiculous.
So to talk about, I know, I can't even believe it. It's, I thought this build was amazing. And the reason why, and I think Dean, you and I have talked about this before, this was the first time ever where we legitimately thought the streak could end here. This is like the build made it seem like, wow, like for the first time ever, the Undertaker is very vulnerable here because he's going up against an opponent that has beaten him a few times before, knows him, and clearly by storyline purposes, keeps getting one up on him, isn't scared of him. We all thought, man, if it's going to end, this could be it.
I remember watching this pay-per-view with George vividly and thinking at one point, I think we even said to each other that I think Michaels might win this match. Mm-hmm. There was a point during this match when I was like, I think it was when he kicked out of the, cause he kicked out. I know Tombstone. I watched this. He kicked out of the Tombstone. And I think I'm almost positive one of us looked at each other and said, I think it was me, because I think I was more like, I think Michaels is going to win this match than George was. I think George was very, I mean, granted, we're talking about something that happened 14 years ago, but yeah. I remember George being like, nah, you're an idiot. Like, but I, at one point was definitely like, yo, this could be it. This could be the end right here. Like, I like, you know, but as history tells,
that was not the end.
Taker prevailed after cracking his skull open on the floor.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy Snuka took a page out of his dad's book. Or Jimmy Snuka's kid took a page out of his dad's book.
He's like, what? It was an accident.
Yeah, I bet. George, did you, looking back now, like you watch it, you watch the build, and like in your head, you know, 14 years later, do you think, man, this was the first time we ever thought it could really end here?
Yeah, I mean, no, nobody thought it was going to end with a casket match against Mark Hunter. I'll fucking tell you that.
Are you sure about that, George?
And I remember watching the match. I watched it tonight, actually, just before we got on here. I remember watching it and just kind of getting lost in the moment. And, you know, at the near falls, kind of being on the edge of my seat. Like, I know how it ends. You know, I know Taker's going to get the win, but it's just, it's great storytelling in the match that you just kind of forget that this match happened 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's like right. That's right.
Like it's the testament of a good match that stands the test of time is when you can look at it and still kind of lose yourself in it and forget the outcome.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the same thing when you're watching a great movie. You know, you're just invested that you kind of, you know, we've all seen Back to the Future so many times, but still at the end of the movie, I'm like, what if he doesn't make it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's great. That's when you know it's so great, because when we watch like Zack Snyder's Justice League, every time at the end we go, man, I've seen this movie 50 times in a row. It's still perfect.
Yeah. 50. I watched it 50 times the month it came out.
And every time I watch this match, I'm just like, man, I just want to keep watching it over and over again.
This is the match that started the doubt for me that the streak would continue. Honestly, I knew the following year that it was going to, because we knew Michaels was retiring. Everybody knew that was happening. There was no secret that this was that was going to be his last match, or supposed to be his last match.
But nobody booed him like they booed Goldberg and Brock at WrestleMania 20 when they're like, hey, both these guys are leaving. Who the fuck cares?
But it was like every match after that, I was just like, okay, this was the match that planted the seed that eventually they're going to pull the trigger and end the streak. And then, you know, they pulled the trigger on the wrong guy. And then Taker was never the same after that.
Yep. Michaels made his entrance in a white coat and white hat, descending on a platform. When he reached the stage, his music started up pretty freaking awesome. He does a just huge pyro down the aisle. The crowd just went nuts. What I loved about this, and this is where I become a mark for the business again. I mean, this is where, like, I wish it was still this way. I wish it was still believable as it was. Even here, when you have guys that have been in the business for so long, they still make you believe it. Mm-hmm. He's walking down the ramp, And there's a point, I don't know if you guys even pay attention to this. I pay attention to stupid things with Shawn Michaels, but there was a point he's walking down the ramp where he stops and he looks behind him. And it's like mind games. Like he thinks Undertaker is going to come up behind him and sneak attack him, which is what he's been doing for like 2 months leading up to this match. I'm like, that's cool. Like mid entrance, he's turning behind him to see if there's anybody behind him.
It's because he's a master of his craft. He can do correct. This. He could do. They both were, and not to diverge a little bit, but Undertaker was just talking about that on that interview with Ariel Helwani.
He just lived the gimmick a little.
A bunch of wrestlers got all butthurt about it, but Taker's 100% right.
Yeah, totally.
Nobody knows how to keep kayfabe alive anymore.
Like, and he didn't even say total kayfabe. He's like, just do it a little bit. Like, give me a little bit. Like, let me believe you a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, man.
Because nowadays, I mean, it is hard to keep kayfabe alive with the internet being so prevalent and social media is just basically running the world. It's hard to keep that stuff alive. But when you have the companies going out there, like WWE does with their 24 doc, you know, with their WWE 24 documentaries, where they, where they show you the stuff behind the curtain a little bit,
WWE is just so much to blame for it as like Twitter is.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's why a lot of people do gravitate towards a guy like MJF. I mean, I think he goes a little too far sometimes, but he lives that character.
Yep.
You don't know if he's in character or if he's just actually an asshole. Like, he does go a little too much, I think. I mean, not for me, I could care less, but like, you watch and go, all right, like, you didn't have to go that far, you know what I mean? But I mean,
I also assume everybody from Long Island accept that.
Yeah. The Undertaker ascends from under the stage, which, you know, again, he rose from hell while Michaels ascended from heaven.
Foreshadowing that he nearly dies in this match.
The announcers put over the light versus dark idea as well. That was Jerry the King Lawler. What's cool was that they were both guys from Texas, and this match is in their home state, so it likely meant a lot to them.
Excuse me, Undertaker's from Death Valley.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, me. My bad.
Kayfabe, goddammit.
Yeah.
So
even a little bit.
We get these two in the ring finally after 4.5 minutes since Taker's music started.
It would just keep increasing and as years go on.
It's weird that Shawn had to look behind him to see if Taker was coming. It's like he didn't watch any WrestleMania's before. You got time, Shawn. You got time even if he does show up.
Exactly. Taker was
great here, by the way. Like, this was like not that Taker got out of shape. Well, he did later on, but he still looked great here in 2009 physically. He really did.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Shawn's always been a specimen, but like Taker looked really good here in 2009. Isn't this when we went, because he had just lost the belt a few months prior to this, did he not? Because this is when we went to SmackDown AC, right, George?
The month prior, he lost the belt the month prior,
and we were on the opposite side of the ramp, and we could tell how Jack Taker was from a football field away. We were like, God, dude's a massive human being.
I was watching this match again. He's huge. When I was watching this match,
he's tall
again the other night. I said it to my wife. I'm like, wow, like this is like peak Taker here. Like this is right before it started to go a little bit down. Mm-hmm. Because you could tell in the End of an Era match 2 years later with Triple H, he put on a little weight. Yeah. He was carrying a little bit more weight, and I just feel like 2009 was like that last year of prime Taker.
I agree. 100%. I agree with you.
Yeah. There was one cool thing right before they started as they locked eyes. Jim Ross had a really cool quote where he said, wow, look at the eyes. One set of eyes defiant, the other destructive. I was like, man, JR, you're good. Like, you're good. Like, you suck now, but boy, you.
Boy, you it's were Wednesday so night. You know what that means? WWE Dynamite.
Oh man. So at the end here of, you know, like I said, the greatest match of all time, after 30 minutes and 45 seconds, the Undertaker goes 17-0, or as JR says, 17-0. He wins by pinfall with a second tombstone post-match, both guys lying on their back. Ross said he was honored to sit at ringside, and it was an outer body experience to see a match like this. The crowd was still going nuts minutes after this was over. Michaels left the ring, Undertaker posed as his music played. Just look, man, this is, to me, again, 10 stars. They definitely followed the Austin Rock formula for the WrestleMania match by having each guy kick out of the big spots once, which was great. Again, I thought there was points where Michaels was going to win, but as it got a little bit further along, I'm thinking, all right, they're probably going to go 17-0 here. But you know, look, Taker after the first, when Michaels kicked out of that first tombstone, the facial expression from the Undertaker was like, damn it, dude. Like, I don't see this shit anymore. It's just like, all right, cool. Here's my third spear. He's just going to kick out and keep going anyway. So it's like, damn, dude, like, put some effort. Like, dude, someone just kicked out of the tombstone pile driver. Like, yes, he's going to show like a shock to that. And the fact that Taker does a header over the top rope, a quarter of the way through the match, you know, he went 15 minutes more after basically breaking his neck.
Did they ever say if he had actually sustained an injury?
They said he sustained a concussion.
Did he?
Yeah.
I have to correct myself. Taker did not lose the belt the month prior. I'm thinking about the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was just awesome, man. And like, you know, you always hear people say, like, the big question following this is, where does it rank amongst the greatest matches ever? I think it's my number. It is hands down my number one. And Austin versus Bret Hart at 13 is my number two. I just think it's this is the wrestling match that you pop into people at NXT and say, this is a professional wrestling match with sports entertainment mixed in. Follow every single step that these two guys do and take a piece from it and learn. Like, that's how I view this match. That's just me, George. Am I overdoing it at all? Like, am I just too in love with this? What do you think?
I mean, you're fanboying hard, but you're right.
Okay.
I mean, it's a masterclass. It's a shame that more people didn't follow like a style like this, or at least learn storytelling.
Yeah.
Because as we're going to see in the years that follow, it's like nobody even gave a shit to pay attention.
Yeah.
It's more it's all about the high spots. It's all about getting a coveted ranking from a dirt sheet writer. It's not like no one's putting the effort in anymore. And it's on both sides. It's on WWE and it's on AEW. They don't sign WWE, but you know for a fact that they're fucking gunning for a Meltzer review or for a Meltzer star rating. But
I agree.
You know, just put the effort into the match itself. Give me a story. I don't want to watch a match. I can watch a match on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, whatever. I can watch matches there. Give me a story. It's the pay-per-view. People pay money for this. Put the chips down and let's just see what happens. Don't give me something I could watch on Monday in the first hour.
I agree. And this was a perfect way to end the pay-per-view. What do you guys give it? As I'm just joking, there's still two more matches left.
No, the pay-per-view ended for me.
The pay-per-view ended here for me, for sure.
It's just like the Batman. I turned it off before the last 90 minutes.
Next match, World Heavyweight title, Edge versus Cena. And some reason they threw the freaking Big Show into a top fucking main event why? Match.
Because reasons.
Because someone needed to eat the pin?
Yes, basically. No, they needed to make sure that both guys were able to get on Cena's shoulders so he can, you know, look strong, pal. Cena gets the win, man, at 14 minutes and 40 seconds. He covered the Big Show for that win. I still gave this match 3 stars, you know, but the thing is, you know, the titles got passed around so much in this era. You know, Cena had the title at No Way Out. Edge snuck his way in the Elimination Chamber match, and then Cena won it back here. You know, 3 weeks after this, Cena lost it back to Edge because Show gave Cena a chokeslam into a lighting structure and somehow is alive. You know, I would have preferred Cena versus just Edge here. Like that would have been a match that people would probably remember to this day. But you throw in the Ogre and it's like nobody cares.
Or like Shrek.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why do you, is it like a, hey, Paul, thanks for being around a while. He also looked fat as hell in this match. He looked like 475, 500 pounds here. He looked bad. I just don't think, again, it's overbooking by Vince. And it's like, well, we got to get everybody on the card. And it's like, no, you don't. You can sell enough with Edge versus Cena. That's all you need. That's all you need. But that's just my opinion.
You're absolutely. I mean, Big Show didn't have to be in a match because wasn't he like in that La Familia group with Vicky and Edge and Chavo anywhere? You could just have Big Show ringside. He didn't need to be in the match.
He could have just been not anywhere at all.
He could have been in catering eating five chickens.
Yeah, I know.
Listen, man, like I say before, I don't know Big Show personally. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But he just did nothing for me almost his entire career.
I agree with you.
He should have came out smoking a cigarette like he did at the Great American Bash.
Oh, my God. The only thing he ever did cool to me was St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And that was his very first appearance in WWF. That was it. And I was like, that was it for me. I could care less what he did after that.
I think he was kind of cool in WCW for a little bit. Maybe a little bit early on in his WWF run, but... Mm-hmm. For the most part, I felt he was just pointless.
Him and Jericho were a pretty decent tag team.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Taker weren't awful either.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were they? Bob and Weave or whatever?
Sure. The Unholy Alliance.
The next match here is the main event of the show. The build, here for Triple H and Randy Orton, I thought was pretty good. You know, Hunter was the champ here. Orton went after Hunter's family, which led to moments like Orton giving, punting the shit out of Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon, RKOing
Stephanie.
Yeah. RKOing Stephanie, and also a DDT off the ropes and then kissing her, which was just
while staring at Triple H while he did it.
Yeah. God, I loved heel Orton, man. There was also Vince and Shane McMahon who showed support for Triple H to counter Rhodes and DiBiase as allies of Orton. But again, it was just another WrestleMania that was all about the McMahons, except this time they actually acknowledged that Hunter was married to Stephanie. But yeah, at the end, man, Triple H gets the win, 23 and a half minutes. I gave it 2 stars. I thought the main event was a real letdown. You know, for over 20 minutes, you know, with wrestlers as legendary and great as these two guys, it just wasn't constructed well. There's a couple times where I saw some botched spots. Orton, you know, just wasn't all in there mentally, I thought. The fans, honestly, I heard boring chants like midway through the match. There were moments even where you heard cheers for Orton, which could have been why he went babyface a year later. But, you know, at the Backlash pay-per-view after this, Orton won the title back and won the WWE title in a 6-man tag match, whatever the hell that was. Like, it's I literally thought like this whole thing was just throwing shit at the wall and hoping that it sticks. I just thought it was a very piss poor main event. George, what did you think of the main event?
It should have been flipped the other way. You should have had, well, first things first, you should have just done Cena and Edge and then had that as your main event.
I agree with you,
because Triple H, as much as we love him, he's on his way out. Well, not his way out, but he's on his way from.
He's getting close to. He's getting close to part time.
To stopping. So I mean, it's probably one kind of final hurrah for him, like one good like final full time run for him. Mm-hmm. But it should have been flipped. The crowd wasn't into it. They were out of it after the Triple H home invasion thing, where he ran into Randy Orton's fake house in front of Orton's fake wife and threw him out the fake window. Mm-hmm. But
it's just crazy, man. So we get to the end of the show here. That's it. By the way, this Hall of Fame class this past year for 2009 was led by Steve Austin, so that was pretty cool. I think Ricky Steamboat also got in as well.
That's why Flair was there, because he inducted Steamboat,
right?
Which apparently he is also inducting the Great Muta.
I guess that makes sense. I still think, I mean, to be honest, if he was in WWE's umbrella, Sting would have been a really good inductor for the Great Muta.
But either one of them is
fine. Either one's fine. Yeah. I agree.
And Conan's inducting Ray.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
I hope he comes out with a flannel shirt buttoned at the top.
Please.
That would be great.
Or loincloth when he used to wear his mask.
I know. So, look, you know, a couple random things here. I run out of words for Undertaker Michaels. So that should have been the main event of the show. And you know, everything's hindsight 2020 at this point. My other thoughts were the both title matches were just not great. And it sucks that both of them are not memorable. You know, it was very boring, to be honest. Like, Hunter wasn't much of a sympathetic character. His family was mostly heels, yet all of a sudden we had to feel sorry for them all.
Yeah.
It just didn't work. I thought they, from a heel perspective, I thought Orton was tippy top at this time. So I give him all that credit there. You know, when it happened, I was surprised that Punk won the Money in the Bank for the second year in a row. But what we didn't know was that, you know, they had planned on turning him heel. And when they did that, he really took off as a performer. You know, his angle with Jeff Hardy in the summer was good. So in hindsight, it made sense for Punk to win. And I said this before, I thought Chris Jericho deserved a bigger role in this pay-per-view, but he's been screwed over a couple times at Mania, hashtag Fandango. Best match of the night to me was Undertaker Shawn. The worst was the Divas Battle Royal. I thought the most memorable moment of the night was Michaels kicking out of the first tombstone with the reaction from Undertaker. I thought that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Out of a 10 though, guys, what do you give this out of a 10? George, I'll start with you.
You know, before I went back and rewatched this match, I probably would have given it a high, or before I watched this pay-per-view, I would have given it a high rating, but after rewatching the pay-per-view, it's a one match show in 2009. That's a damn shame. I really am just going to kind of go maybe 5.5, and it's all Taker and HBK. I can't give it anything higher than that because the rest of the show is painfully unforgettable.
Yeah, forget.
For WrestleMania.
Yeah, I agree. Dean.
Yeah, I'm going to go like a 5 out of 10.
Wow. You guys actually gave it a lot lower than I thought you were going to give it.
I mean, it is. It's a one match show and the Money in the Bank match is decent. Like that's it. Like there's really nothing else for this show to hang its hat on.
Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed with it rewatching it. Like I thought, you know, 14 years ago, I was probably like, man, that was a good WrestleMania. And now I'm just like, man, what the hell was I thinking 14 years ago?
So I also gave it a 5. So I'm actually really surprised that we all agree on this. I thought that the two title matches were very mediocre. I'll never say that they're bad, so I'll say they were mediocre. I thought Big Show really hurt the value of that title match with Edge and Cena. To me, Undertaker and Michaels probably should have went semi-main. It should have been right before Orton and Triple H.
Absolutely.
That's where I would have put. If you're not going to close with Taker and Michaels, which is like a blasphemy in itself. If you're not going to close with them two, they should be your second main. I mean, I think they've earned that to be this over Cena, Edge, and Big Show. That's just my opinion. Because the match before, I think the world title match damaged the energy going into Triple H and Orton because it wasn't such a highlighted match that I don't think people cared by the time you got to the final match. If it was Taker and Michaels right before Orton and Triple H, I think they would have had a hot crowd, I think, at the end there.
Or maybe they should have had a letdown match in between Shawn and Taker and the World Heavyweight title. Let the crowd calm back down so they can get rehyped again for the next match.
Yeah, that would have been fine. I mean, you could have even thrown in the Rey Mysterio JBL thing there.
Yeah.
Had them go, or maybe Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy there. Another let me down. That wouldn't have worked. So yeah, I think the JBL and Rey would have been a good spot. But yeah, that's just where it is. All right. Yeah. So we all give it a 5. That's really good. A good hard 5 there. All right. Next week, we are covering WrestleMania 20 from Madison Square Garden. This was a
Return of the Dead Man.
Yep.
It all begins again.
Yep. So this show was loaded. And this is a 12 match card here. You had Christian versus Jericho, Evolution versus the Rock and Sock Connection. Goldberg, you know, and Lesnar, which was a shit show with Austin as the referee. Then you had Guerrero against Kurt Angle, Taker versus Kane, and then the greatest triple threat match of all time, Chris Benoit, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels for the world title.
Ooh, can't be mentioning it.
Yep, right. We have been canceled.
Fuck us.
I'm looking forward to watching this banger of a show. So this is going to be really good to cover next week. Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram. Boys, you guys just did a movie on the Multiverse Movie Podcast. Tell everybody what you guys just did.
Did the Birdcage.
Great movie, man. Great, what a classic.
Mm-hmm.
What a cast, too. Holy God. Mm-hmm. You look back now and go, jeez. Just star power on top of star power.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you guys want to learn some useless information real fast?
Of course. That's what my podcasts are all about.
Vin Diesel's real name is Mark Sinclair.
Why wouldn't he just go through life with that one?
Let that sink in, that Vin Diesel has the most generic name ever.
Like with a name like that, he should be selling me a house or life insurance.
I forget how I even got there. I don't know.
Rabbit Who hole. Knows?
Oh, you Probably. Know what it was? I think I was skimming through WrestleManias from the Wikipedia page, and I clicked on Dave Bautista, and then I eventually clicked on Guardians of the Galaxy, and then I got to Vin Diesel.
And then he got to Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, who was in the holiday special. So yeah. There you go. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Thank you, everybody, for listening in, and thank you to all who listened to WrestleMania 5 that we did last week. That was fun as well. Looking forward to next week again, WrestleMania 20, and we're getting so much closer to WrestleMania 39. So we're excited to be talking about that in just a few weeks. We will all be at George's for night one, and then we'll all be at my house for night two. So all three of us will have, you know, a bird's eye view of our review show for WrestleMania 39.
Hanging from the rafters.
Yep. All right. Hope everybody has a great rest of their week and weekend, and we'll catch you guys down the road. Have a good one. Bye-bye.